You don't need no friends. Get back your faith again. You have the power to believe. Another dissident. Take back your evidence. It has no power to deceive.
When I see it for myself.
Welcome back to Hardline. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We are speaking today with Vinny Eastwood. He is the host of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, broadcast 5 days a week, 3 to 5 Pacific time on American Freedom Radio. His websites are the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, GorillaMedia.co.nz, and realgorillamedia.com. Now, before we went on break, when you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, I put out this article about how the CIA has been using the Patriot Act to spy on Americans' bank transactions. And some of the reaction I got from it was, of course they are. Of course they're looking at your banking transactions. That's not news. That's not a big deal. And I just, I kind of do that palm to the face kind of motion works. Why is that not okay? That's still happening. The corruption is still happening. Why is that all of a sudden okay? Because it's old corruption.
Corruption's corruption. Scumbaggery is scumbaggery. And it must be exposed. No matter who it is. It doesn't matter whether it's your best friend and confidant or your worst enemy. You've got to expose the scumbaggery. I mean, look at it this way. The only reason why any bad thing happens in the entirety of society is because there's a scumbag behind it every single time, invariably. So the reason why it's so important to expose scumbaggery is to prevent bad things from happening, because it's the cause of all bad things. I don't know why people don't get this. You know, they try to dismiss it as infighting or whatever, but it's not.
When there are actual documents proving an assertion or proving a theory, when there are actual documents showing you that what you thought was happening is actually going on, it takes it to a whole new level, and it needs to be recognized with that respect, that now you have actual evidence to show that what you thought was happening is actually happening, and you have to deal with it from that perspective on, in light of this evidence proving your theory. I don't understand why people will agree to that as far as investigative journalism goes. But
it's because they appeal to authority. And even journalists say, oh, well, that person's a credible journalist. I'll appeal to them. They must be an authority on something. When the reality is, if you are in a position of power and control and or influence, whether that be a doctor, a lawyer, a politician, a radio host, or a television newscaster, it is very, very likely that person could quite possibly be a psychopath. All right? Because the reason I can say this categorically is because I'm quoting from the American Medical Journal, who said that these are the industries which psychopaths cluster in. Okay? How do you define a psychopath? Well, it's a person who's very smiley and happy and friendly when you first meet them, but ultimately doesn't have any long-lasting relationships and doesn't care about anybody other than themselves. Doesn't it sound like almost every employer you've ever had? What's the commonality here? Power and control. Influence. Entourage. They love having an audience. They love manipulating people. They love deceiving. They love committing scumbaggery. It's the only thing that motivates them. And unless they've got power and control over other people, they wouldn't be able to fulfill their desire.
That is a pervading ideology that is seeped into our everyday life. We display as a culture, as a society, psychopathic behaviors toward each other. But there are actually real instances where historically you can see with Hitler with Stalin, that these people have an ability toward influencing the general population and utilizing crowd psychology and utilizing things that were shown in the Ash conformity study, that people want to be part of a crowd, that people want to belong to something, that they will not go against the crowd, that they have a personal interest invested in the person they look up to. And so if that person that they look up to is corrupt, it becomes a personal identification issue with the audience. And so by putting the audience in that position, they create this strange army of people who will do anything, even if it goes against their morals, ethics, and values.
That's right. I mean, how do you suppose Germans were influenced into instituting a police state on their own people and asking them for papers wherever they go and taking away all of their freedoms? It wasn't because everybody in Germany was a bad person. It was because they were all indoctrinated into crowd psychology, into groupthink, into silo mentality, right? If you've got an authority figure in a uniform, in a lab coat, or with a microphone, they can get you to do things that you would never do on your own. They can get you to commit crimes. They can get you to commit murder. They can get you to lie through your teeth in defense of them. You know, this is the problem that we're dealing with. This crowd psychology is very, very powerful. This is the reason why shock jocks are so influential, because people always, always listen to them. If they say something really crazy and outlandish, that's when somebody will start listening to them. Somebody says something that's perfectly reasonable and profound, bugger all, people will listen to you. All right, this is the way society has been influenced these days, and it's quite sad to see. I'm just glad that I'm not one of those shock jocks, that I'm not one of these evil, manipulative, psychopathic filth who care nothing about human dignity, who care nothing of respect, who care nothing of patriotism, who are heartless and are followed by the mindless. I'm glad I'm not one of those people. What occurred to me is like, I get attacked quite a bit by people in my position. And I have my listeners who occasionally come round to my place, who I've met at protests and what have you. And what occurred to me is that none of them like me and stick up for me for no good reason, right? They all know precisely why they listen to my show. They all accurately perceive the things that I'm saying. They don't go out and abuse people on my behalf. They don't write hit pieces on people on my behalf, unless that person is actually evil, has actually done wrong. And this is the thing that I feel actually defines me as very, very different from other talk radio show hosts in this field. I mean, number one, I'm from New Zealand. Name me another talk radio show host from New Zealand who's talking about this kind of stuff, you know, in America. It just doesn't happen. It's because I know more about America than the majority of Americans, which is a very sad indictment on the country, I must say. However, the salt of the earth, this is an old movie, and this is something that I think embodies, at a large extent, my audience, because they are the salt of the earth. They are really nice, decent people. Vast majority, I think about 80% of my listeners, according to my YouTube rankings, are between the ages of 40 and 65. Okay, so that means 8 out of 10 of the people who listen to me are roughly twice my age, have twice my life experience, right? And they've maintained, despite all those decades of public education, propaganda from the media, medical mafia misadventure, they've maintained their own sense of freedom and their own ability to discern truth from fiction. This makes my audience, in my opinion, one of the most intelligent audiences in talk radio, one of the audiences with the most integrity. Every conversation that I have with them, whether it be on Skype or in person or on Facebook or whatever, seeks to only reinforce that fact. And what I tell people is that if I ever become corrupted, if heaven forbid I become some form of douchebag, I wish my audience to be honest enough and have enough integrity to expose me for the scumbag that I have become. For if anybody in a position of influence, such as a radio show, gets to the point where they believe their own BS, then they cease to have value to the so-called truth movement. This is my belief. And once that happens, there really isn't any going back until somebody exposes you. And that's why I would wish to be exposed if I did start to be some kind of a scumbag. This is why I love to be criticized, because it either gives me an opportunity to sit back and go, oh my God, they're right. I have been doing this wrong, haven't I? Or, even better, it gives me a chance to defend my position and bring some understanding to the person who might be criticizing me without seeing the full spectrum of information that I've used to make my decisions. Putting people on a pedestal, saying that they're above suspicion, saying that they can't be criticized, is the precisely wrong thing to do, particularly in this sphere of influence. Nobody is above reproach. Everybody should be suspect. A suspicious mind is a healthy mind. You can trust somebody, but make sure you trust them based upon sound evidence. If they make a claim and have absolutely zero evidence to back it up, then they're lying or they're misinformed. And if you criticize them and say, well, you made this claim, but you don't have any evidence to back it up, and they block you or start gang stalking you or something, you know that you're not dealing with an honest, decent radio host. You're dealing with a psychopath, because they don't like criticism. They don't like anybody showing them up for what they are. There's only two things that they fear. Worse psychopaths, who play by just as many rules as they do, i.e. none, or being exposed, being put out to the light of day. But the difficulty here is, if you've got an audience behind you, you've got a veritable army for which to demonize, propagate disinformation and so on and so forth against the people who are trying to expose you. And people have an emotional investment in not exposing radio hosts or other individuals that they've put up on a pedestal. And there's a good reason for that, because you spent all that effort, all that emotional investment, pushing somebody up above you onto a pedestal. Once they come crashing down, it's not just them that falls, but it is you as well, because they fall right onto you, the person who put them up there. All right? Understand that we're all human, well, some of us anyway, and that we all make mistakes. And if you put somebody on a pedestal, you are setting yourself up to fail. Okay? Every single person that I've ever had max respect for has disappointed me at some point. Really? I'm not kidding. Everybody has done things that I disagree with or feel wrong about or whatever. But if they apologize or change their tune and or continue to do what they say they're going to do, then they're definitely not a psychopath. Psychopaths don't ever apologize for anything, ever. You know, seriously, think about this. Have you ever seen anybody attack someone else and then turn out that they're wrong and then never apologize for it or even mention it? that's not a good person. That's not somebody who understands what apologizing and being human is really about.
I agree. When you look at what Gustav Le Bon was saying with crowd psychology, and I don't have time to get into this. We'll get into it on the other side. I want to explain to everyone, because I want to go into this, how crowd psychology works. What Gustav Le Bon was talking about, this is what Edward Bernays and Sigmund Freud brought to the United States with the government and corporations and advertising and everything, the structure of our society inside of public schools. This idea was brought in, and this is what controls our world. And when we come back from break, I want to get into this. So, folks, don't go away. You're listening to Hardline with Suzanne Posel, and I am speaking to Vinnie Eastwood of The Vinnie Eastwood Show, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we will be back in just a few moments.
You don't need no friends. Get back your faith again. You have the power to believe. Another dissident. Take back your evidence. It has no power to deceive.
I believe it when I see it for myself.
Welcome back to Hardline. I'm Suzanne Posel, and my guest is Vinnie Eastwood, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Before I went to break, Vinnie, I wanted to read these out to the audience, because what Gustav Le Bon spoke about was that a crowd exists and evolves in three stages: submergence, contagion, and suggestion. So in submergence, the first stage, the individuals lose their sense of individuality and sense of personal responsibility. And research shows that this occurs because of the sense of anonymity to the individual that is fostered by the crowd. So people think that because they're in a crowd, they can't be seen. If a bottle goes flying out of the crowd, who knows who threw it? And in contagion, the second stage, it reveals the propensity of the individual to follow the crowd unquestioningly toward a directed set of goals and emotional responses that overpower the individual's personal knowledge of right and wrong. So they will then, at the stage of contagion, just behave like a crowd. You hear it referenced that the crowd had a mind of its own. And these people start to behave as one organism. At the third stage, which is suggestion, the uncivilized behavior overtakes the crowd as a wave through each individual's unconscious because of a single person's belief and ideas, which then can be implanted into the crowd and adopted by all individuals. This is when one guy stands up, if there's a huge crowd in the middle of the street, one guy stands up on the hood of a car and starts expounding on something, and the whole crowd will do whatever he says at that point. That is why this methodology and use of this methodology against an audience is extremely destructive. And the person using it needs to... The audience needs to be given the tools to recognize when they are being taken for a ride.
Yeah. Well, see, it occurred to me yesterday, actually, Suzanne, I was thinking about this crowd psychology. And as I was reading Ian Wishart's ebook, Totalitarian, he was mentioning about the propensity for societies to simply crumble and collapse because of the words of one person controlling the crowd. And I thought to myself, hey, what if I was that person? What if I got up and through my mellow accent and capacity to put words together, manipulated a crowd into recognizing what crowd psychology is, manipulated a crowd into thinking for themselves, manipulated a crowd so to recognize that they're being brainwashed, manipulated them into being unmanipulable. Right? The irony is that once I've got power over people's minds like that, then I would become corrupted by simply having the power over people's minds. And there would be very little to stop me from attempting to accomplish my own goals and aims in charge of that crowd. So I choose to think about this in terms of how can I do this, but be very ironic when I do it. I was just thinking, maybe I should run for parliament. Okay, so I'll get up and I'll be running as an independent. And my campaign platform will be more of the same. And people ask me, what are your policies? And I say, well, I'm just going to copy all of the other parties' policies so that they're exactly the same and there's no real foreseeable difference. And then I'll lie and tell them that I came up with them myself. And then when people vote me in, I won't actually implement any of those policies at all. I'll just tell people, oh, the previous government got us into too much debt or whatever, so now I've got to screw you all over and not keep a single one of my promises. But it's not my fault. It's the other guy's fault for messing this round. I wasn't lying to you. They were just deceiving you, and now I have to carry on and perpetuate the lie. Otherwise, everybody will be really angry with me for telling the truth.
You know what's funny? Here's what's funny. That just happened. Yeah, no, that just happened. Going back to those declassified documents that I was talking about earlier in the broadcast, the Obama administration is doing that right now. It's not my fault. It's the Bush administration. Here's all these documents we've released. We've declassified all these documents. Look, we're just carrying along the programs that the Bush administration put in. It's not our fault. Don't get mad at us. Here, look, here's the evidence.
Yeah, but I'll tell people that it probably is my fault, but and then just tell them that I'm just going to lie about it. Like, this is during the campaign process, you know, when you tell everybody what they want to hear.
Like, we need change.
Yeah. I'll tell you, we need change like a baby does, you know, and for the same reason. I'll just be like, well, what's your policy on helping the economy? And go, well, I'm planning on getting us monstrously into debt to foreign bankers and then selling out everything that we've got that actually makes us revenue in order to pay the interest on those, so that the bankers will not only have us massively in debt so that we'll all be indentured servants, but we also won't have any resources and no ability to pay off all of the debt, so that nobody will actually have any form of freedom because they'll have to work as a slave on big plantations or something like that that the government will put up, and then everything will be hunky-dory. And we'll increase your taxes at the same time as well to pay more debt to the bankers. As well as that,
I know.
That's what my campaign promises are. More of the same. Just do exactly what everybody else is doing, but just be honest with them and just say, look, this is what I'm planning to do. Vote for me if you want more of the same. At least I'll be honest about it, you know? I mean, come on. People crave an honest politician who says, look, I'm going to frack all of you. I'm going to lie to you endlessly. I'm going to deceive you into supporting policies that are against your interests. Vote for me, ladies and gentlemen. You voted for everybody else who's been doing this exact same thing that I'm doing to you now. What's changed? Keep going. More of the same, ladies and gentlemen. Please, vote for me. I promise to lie to you. I promise to undermine the country's sovereignty. I promise to legislate away your rights. I promise to increase your taxes. I promise to destroy the governance structure of the entire country. I promise to ignore your submissions. I promise to ignore your referendums. I promise to ignore your petitions. I promise to ignore any kind of political activism or dissident. I promise to surveil as many political dissidents as possible if they are indeed a threat to the agenda of my bank buddies. I promise to frack your country over completely. Vote for me if you want nothing to change.
That sounds an awful lot like every gentleman who got actually into office. He said the exact opposite and did exactly what you just said.
Precisely. Okay. I will win by a fracking landslide, all right? Because people will be used to it. They'll be like, oh my God, this guy's talking a lot of sense. He'd frack over the country, destroy our sovereignty, make me a slave, get me into massive debt. Jeez, that's worth a vote, isn't it?
Sure. At least we would honestly voting for someone that we really wanted in office, because we would be understanding that that is exactly what's happening to us. It wouldn't be a shock anymore. And then maybe people could make an informed decision at some point, or maybe think about making one, that they maybe don't want to go on status quo, you know, that it's not working.
Yeah. Well, see, the irony is, because I'll be telling the truth, people might actually vote for me simply because of the fact that I'm telling the truth. And they know that because I'm telling the truth, that I'm not one of them, that I actually see what the real problems are. And because I'm saying the exact opposite of what all the other politicians do, they all just tell you lies and then frack you over. I'm just going to lie to you and tell you that I'm going to frack you over. And then once elected, renege on all of my promises, just like the rest of the politicians do. So you'll be lulled into a false sense of security while I kick out the bankers, abolish the private central bank that runs this country, fire most of the directors of Treasury in this country, and dissolve Parliament with a giant aerial spraying of sulfuric acid. All right, I'll be done. You know, I mean, come on, ladies and gentlemen. Just vote for the troublemaker. All right, what do you got to lose? You've already lost all your freedoms. You've already lost all your financial security. You've already lost all your sovereignty. You've already lost all your healthcare benefits. You know, what do you got to lose? Just vote for the troublemakers. Vote for the rabble-rousers. Because at least they can mess with these people in Parliament. Because you can't. Because you're too busy with your slave job. Okay? That's what politics really should be about. Getting people to fight the battles for you that you cannot fight for yourself. Everything else, on the other hand, you have to take personal responsibility for and fight for yourself and not elect somebody to fight for you. Okay?
Oh, wait a minute. That sounds like a constitutional republic.
Yeah, fine.
Isn't that what America started off as?
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. That's exactly what it was. You know, the states and the individual was sovereign. Just like the states, and the government was there to make sure the states could run their business, and the state was there to make sure that the individual had wasn't able to enact their rights. But the individuals had just as much sovereign rights as everybody else did, federal, state, and whatnot. So if you had a dispute, you could deal with it appropriately. You didn't have to go through all these channels and pay all these fees and if you had a complaint against someone in the legal system, it had to have a monetary damage attached to it. Otherwise, it wasn't a complaint, because if money wasn't being exchanged, it wasn't worth anyone's time. You know what I mean? That whole movement toward everything being surrounded by what the monetary value of everything is, and whether or not anyone has laid a claim because they have a sheet of paper that says they incurred so much monetary damage because they something bad happened to them, even though something bad happened to them and they have every right to go against the party that was responsible. Do you understand?
Mm. Yeah, that's right. And if you want to contribute to my political campaign, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate today. Or better yet, make a long-term donation, because it'll be a long-term goal to sell the country out to the bankers. So I'll need a lot of funding on a consistent basis. So if you are an international banker and you want the country to be sold out to foreigners, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribe for $5 a month. I'm sure if you can create money out of thin air, you can give me $5 a month to frack the country on your behalf. I love being ironic. It's great. I can just imagine actually giving this speech in like a town hall or something like that, with all the other politicians standing behind me going, God damn it, this guy's exposing our agenda by telling the truth. Fuck! He's going to steal our votes.
Where's your electoral college now?
Yeah, that's right. I got political science down to a T. I've got a political science degree that is capable of engineering a political bioweapon to infect you with the truth, to make you have a death rattle, motherfracker.
Well, see, that's the funny thing about crowd psychology, is it's a tool in the hands of the people, just like technology. Technology is a tool. In the hands of the right people, there's nothing wrong with technology or advancing technologically. In the hands of the wrong people, it's a weapon. In the hands of the wrong people, crowd psychology is a weapon. It's a double-edged sword. It needs to be in the hands of the right people. Because there are ways in which we should think globally to facilitate all of our survival and harmoniously. However, in the hands of the wrong people, we have division and we have war and we have disease. And it's okay for someone to starve as long as I have my own.
Yeah. Well, I think we're being characterized by a lack of empathy for our common man, a lack of community. And the elite have done a remarkable job of destroying what it is to have a human society. Have you noticed that? I mean, it's only just starting to happen here in New Zealand now, but apparently it's been going on in the States for a while. People sitting at tables together, having a meal, and they don't say a frickin' word to each other, just eyes buried in their iPhone, you know?
Yes.
And there's no community anymore. There's no real relationships. I mean, when was the last time that you had a real conversation with somebody? There's a great movie called God Bless America. It's written by a comedian named Bobcat Goldthwait. And one of the lines from the movie is, when was the last time you had a real conversation? You know, something important or something personal. And, you know, it's really sad. Because people can go for years at a time without doing that. Me, I can barely go a day without having an important conversation with somebody. And that's not just because I've got a 5-day-a-week radio show where I invite on activists and people with important stuff to say. That's not the only reason why I don't go a day without it. It's because it's the only conversations that I choose to have. In fact, I was criticized one time when I was a student in Dunedin by a friend of mine saying, look, Vinny, you know what your problem is? And I go, what? And he says, you try to force good conversation on people.
Well, Vinny, I have to cut you off. I'm sorry. I have to go to break. But let's pick this up on the other side. Folks, don't go away. This is Hardline with Suzanne Posel, and I'm speaking to Vinny Eastwood from thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Stay tuned. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Hardline. This is our final segment, and we have Vinny Eastwood with us. TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com is his website. When you were talking, it reminded me of this this new RFID chip. Google owns Motorola Mobility. And so Motorola has filed a patent for this little electronic skin tattoo that can be applied to the throat or can be worn on a collar around the user's neck. Isn't that nice? This is what you were talking about. And it's trendy, too. It's cool.
Yeah. It's cool to be a slave. And this is another part of my political campaign, is encourage people to be even more of a slave. If they see a police officer, they must get down on their knees and prostrate themselves in front of them and worship them as gods and ask them if you can clean their boots with your tongue. And if you do not prostrate yourself in front of a police officer and declare that they are God, that is an arrestable offense, okay? And you will be sent to government re-education where you will no longer have the mental capacity to think for yourself, because that's a threat to the state that I want to run. Okay? Vote for me if you want no change. That's all I'm saying, you know.
Listen to what this electronic skin tattoo can do. It can further include a galvanic skin response detector to detect skin resistance of the user. So it's able to be used as a lie detector. So you're putting this on because it's got, you can hook it up to your mobile phone. You can hook it up to your computer. It has a microphone so you can listen to music. It's on your neck, so it's right next to your ear. And it's a lie detector. Why would Google want people to wear an electronic lie detector?
So that when the police bust them, they can't see, no, that's not my weed officer.
Absolutely. So they know that you're lying. They've got it on record. Because remember that the data that it flows through between you and the third party to get to its destination, that in-between space, that belongs to that party that you have the contractual agreement with, and they're able to do whatever they want with it. Give it to any other party, any third party that they want. The government, they can sell it for advertising purposes, or just keep it if they want to profile you.
It's a scary world we're beginning to see getting set up, isn't it? It's quite depressing, actually, you know? Like, you think about this. How many people died so that the United States could have a constitution, you know? Why do you think the Founding Fathers said these rights are given to us by God? You know why? Because God has more authority than government. And the Founding Fathers knew that rights should be endowed to you by an authority greater than government. Therefore, government would be incapable of taking them away. And the problem is, constitutions stop being taught to people. Civics stop being taught in schools. So now people have no idea that their rights are endowed to them by God. No idea whatsoever. And as a result of people not knowing where their rights really come from, they think it comes from the government and think that the government can take those rights away from you. It's not the case. Never has been. Never should be. But unfortunately, it's very difficult to stop people believing in lies. In fact, Mark Twain had a great quote regarding this. He says, it's far easier to convince somebody of a lie than to convince somebody that they've been lied to.
That is absolutely true. People believe that they're being lied to by government or by the mainstream or any media outlet. They don't believe the lie when they're personally involved. They just don't believe you. You can show them copious amounts of evidence and they absolutely refuse. That is cognitive dissonance. That is cognitive dissonance. When they see the evidence and they just look at you and say, that's not true. That's not true.
And that's the irony with cognitive dissonance, because cognitively it makes me want to diss them because they're being so freaking stupid.
But that is the psychosis of the society. That's the blockage. It's not what the government is doing. It's not what corporations are doing. The blockage is coming from the people themselves because they see the evidence and they just say, I don't believe it. They come up with any excuse in their mind. They sleep on it. They come up with some scheme. They understand something from some other level. And then all of a sudden it negates all of the evidence that you've brought to their table and they don't believe you. The evidence was faked. It's falsified. It was photoshopped. Ironically, people exposing corruption, it seems to be the audience is swayed depending on whether or not it benefits them. If it benefits them that a group exposes corruption, they say, wow, yay, the group is exposing corruption. If it doesn't benefit them that the group is exposing corruption, they say, oh, that group is part of the CIA. That group is part of the government. That group is a psyop. I just don't get the reasoning when we're
That's
trying to...
That's because there is none, and you're trying to reason why some people are being unreasonable. Doesn't work. It's like, I mean, seriously, it's like walking in a running race. It doesn't work. Okay, you're just not on the same wave level. You're not on the same wavelength. I mean, it's just not possible to understand insanity without becoming insane. All right.
Why is it okay to expose some corruption and not expose other corruption? Why is other
Because that corruption I'm invested in emotionally, and therefore I don't want it to be exposed. Just that simple. People are afraid of emotional trauma. People are afraid of thinking, man, I was wrong all this time. I'll actually have to think for myself. Damn, that's a lot of responsibility to think for myself. You're saying I also have to review evidence myself without having somebody just tell me exactly what it is and not have to read anything, not have to actually explore anything? You're telling me I have to do all this now? That I actually have to take personal responsibility for my own thoughts and my own words? Frack that.
You know,
I'd rather give it to some authority figure.
That's common law, and that's part of a constitutional republic. That's part of what we were talking about earlier. When the individual people of this nation under a constitutional republic were sovereign, they had the rights under common law to go to have settle and dispute issues with each other just as readily as a legal system would. And it had just as merit and just as much bite, as much force, the agreements, accords, judgments that came down as a result. But here in this culture now, you know, you don't show up on time, whatever. I'm sorry, and it's no big deal. You make a promise to someone to help them fix something, and you don't do it. Oh, well, it's no big deal. You know, we don't have any personal responsibility toward our own personal lives, and we have no personal responsibility in any of the actions that we do, because it's always some other boogeyman somewhere out there doing it to us. When part of the huge, gigantic problem is our participation in it at every single level. And if we stop, that would take a major part of the equation out of it.
I think you're right. And it seems that people overdo this whole personal responsibility thing. You know, it's all they talk about. Oh, you know, personal sovereignty, blah, 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 blah. Well, here's the problem with people who criticize personal responsibility. Everything is caused by people not taking responsibility. You have a moral obligation to think for yourself, a moral obligation to discern fact from fiction. If you vote for somebody who destroys your country because you didn't think for yourself, it is your fault that the country gets destroyed. If you listen to somebody on talk radio and you never check out a single one of the facts that they claim to have to verify whether or not there is any evidence at all, and that person winds up destroying movements, hijacking things, destroying people's lives, that is your fault because you didn't take that moral responsibility to have your own house in order. It is your fault, ladies and gentlemen, that America is the way it is. It is your fault that radio show hosts who are psychopathic grow to fame. It is your fault that the mainstream media keeps lying to people. It is your fault that the police are private institutions. It is your fault that the groundwater is being contaminated by fracking. It is all your fault. I've realized that all of my problems were all my fault, and I decided that I'd start doing something about it. That making $5,000 a month, cash in hand, wasn't good enough for me. I wanted to expose a little bit of scumbaggery. I wanted to improve the world around me. I didn't want to make money. Why would I want to actually just spend my entire life making money and never actually do anything important with my life? Okay? I realized that I was to blame. I was to blame for my own life's problems. Later on, I realized that I was to blame for the way that my government is turning out, for the way people are behaving around me, because I wasn't standing my ground and I wasn't taking my responsibilities to myself and society at large seriously enough. You can listen to me at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. There's Vinny with the wire because it's the most important question, and Eastwood doesn't go ahead. Make my news on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And for those of you who are listening live, I guess I'm coming up next. And thank you, Suzanne, for allowing me this this wonderful platform you got here on the Time for Hemp Network.
Thank you very much for coming. And I'll have you back on. And folks, go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com. His show starts in about 5 minutes, and go listen to Vinny Eastwood. And thank you, Vinny, for coming on my show. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll speak with you on Thursday. Take care.